This is Ben Crenshaw of Crenshaw on Golf, and you're listening to Inside the Ropes on Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio.
Welcome back to Inside the Ropes. I'm Will Haskett, Carl Paulson with the day off, doing chores around the house apparently. Dennis Paulson with me. I'm broadcasting live from the Ohio Turfgrass Foundation Conference and Show. Visit the fine folks here at Kalahari Resort and Convention Center at KalahariResorts.com and also ShoreAndIslands.com for great stuff going up here on the Lake Erie shores. And pleased to be joined by, I mean, he wears like six different hats at this convention, Jason Straka, an architect at Fry Straka Global Golf Course Design. But more importantly, you're the incoming treasurer for the Ohio Turfgrass Foundation. So I've got a million different ways that we could go with this interview. Unfortunately, we only have about 10 or so minutes, Jason. But first of all, thanks for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
My second time at this conference. I'm blown away by the diversity, the level of educational programming. We're going to get into golf course architecture and talk about some of your projects and some of the awards that you have won. But from your standpoint as an architect, what is this week? What goes into the education of your peers, of those in the golf industry, to understand what we're doing in a modern climate of golf course building and maintaining it? Because it's drastically different than what your peers did 50 years ago or even 25 years ago.
No question. You know, what's so nice about this conference and a lot of similar turfgrass conferences around the country is that all of my colleagues and peers and the golf course superintendents, which produce those wonderful golf course playing conditions that we really enjoy, come here for their continuing education. So all of the great technologies that are being implemented for maintenance, they learn about them at places like this. And for me, as a golf course architect, I learn also how to implement those technologies with those turfgrass colleagues to give you guys those conditions. So a lot of what I do is design actually impacts, of course, how the golf courses can and will be maintained.
Okay, so from a maintenance standpoint, I thought this was a really important year from an architecture standpoint because of what happened at Pinehurst in the U.S. Open is that it got so much attention for what Cor Crenshaw did to redo that golf course. But part of the redo was not just bringing back some of the charm of what it was originally designed to do. Environmentally, a lot of the redos was huge for the sustainability of that property moving forward, water conservation, all of that. How big of a difference is there now in golf course construction when it comes to environmentally friendly, if we want to use that term, compared to what, say, it was 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago?
The environmental movement really started about 20 years ago. But back in the 50s and 60s, people say golf sort of lost its way. But it really has changed and rapidly changed, all for the better. I mean, all golf courses now try to use the least amount of water, pesticides, fertilizers, any fossil fuels, that we can possibly, get away with for sure. It all comes down to, not only environmental aspects, but cost savings too. You're trying to make the game more affordable, pass that along to draw more people into the game itself.
Well, living in Southern California and Northern California, we're in the worst drought that we've had. And one of my favorite golf courses on the entire planet is Pasatiempo. And when I saw the pictures of Pasatiempo just having water on their tees and their greens and everything else was complete, it looked like dirt. It saddened me. But I understand them trying to do what they need to do up there to try to conserve water. That's a huge factor on the West Coast. I know that you guys get all the rain you're ever going to need up there in Ohio. Every time I'm there, we're in thunderstorms. But there's got to be a good push right now in trying to find golf courses. Less grass is better. Phil Mickelson's doing something at Torrey Pines on the North Course there where they're going to try to introduce more of the surrounding look with the chaparral that's there. Now, not grow it up where you can't find your ball, but just have dirt where a guy can play a ball. It's not going to be grass that you got to maintain and water. And I think isn't that really kind of where it's going right now? What can I do for you as a designer? Create a hazard that functionally is going to work and it's not going to cost a lot of money to take care of. And also I don't have to water and fertilize and cut it.
You're exactly right. And I'll give you an interesting example of how we're using new technology to figure out how to help us better implement that type of a strategy. There's actually little handheld GPS units now that we give golfers. We can give them, for instance, if you had Seniors Day, Ladies Day, a Pro-Am, whatever the case might be, you can give 100 of these little handheld GPS units to the golfers. They put them in their pocket. They're really no bigger than a UBS thumb drive, is what you can sort of think about them as. And what happens is that they track your whereabouts all throughout the golf course. And then if you're driving a golf cart, you know, even where you drive them, and people say, well, that's, you know, aren't you looking in as like sort of privacy? And I, well, you know, here's how we use that data, though, is that if you had 100 golfers, you know, we can figure out where the wear patterns are, if we need to better position cart paths, if tees need to perhaps be bigger. But then also what we can say is that, well, geez, we've collected now this data over, say, a month. And there are places on a golf course that maybe only 1% of all golfers actually play out of. And I say, well, gosh, you know, never thought about that. But you know, what happens now is that if we can take an acre, 2 acres, and maybe that then translates into 10 acres over an entire golf course out of play, out of maintenance, you know, maybe those areas get fully irrigated and mowed on a weekly basis. We take those places out of irrigation, out of maintenance, and then all of a sudden now you're saving a considerable amount of water. And so that's a new technology that really we've only started to use within the past year or two.
Well, the one thing that I found too is that I've heard golf courses, especially in Southern California, they're doing exactly what you're saying about the rough lines, and they're like not mowing anymore. And then it becomes kind of its own ecosystem. You just only have to water about once every 2 weeks, and it kind of humidifies itself and it keeps growing. It might be 6 or 7 inches long. And what they're doing is they're trying to cut these areas near the tree lines. And if a guy hits it in there, he's going to lose his ball. Let's be honest. It's pretty thick. But they're going to give you a free drop like it's ground under repair. But now you're right in the tree lines. You're not going to have a shot. So you're not penalized for, other than the fact that you lost your golf ball and you got to put another ball in play. But they're giving you a free drop from this area. And now they're taking 6, 7, 8, maybe 9 acres on a golf course. You take 10% of the golf course away, and it's in an area, like you said, it's not that much playable, or it's a huge open area where maybe a lot of guys were playing shots too because it was a shortcut to a hole or something. Now now that ball is never going to be in the open area where that long grass is. They're going to be back in the trees. I think it's a brilliant idea that guys are coming up with.
Golf, we're always trying to make it more sustainable. There's no doubt about it. And that's also from an environmental and economic and a social aspect. It's all three of those are important. Most people tend to just focus on the environmental side of things. But you know, as a pragmatist, I'm looking at bringing more people into the game.
Right.
I enjoy golf. I grew up with golf just as you guys had. And you know, selfishly, I want, you know, my son to play and my grandchildren to play, you know, when it comes time and all these things. We need to have the golf continue and, you know, strive for sustainability, no doubt.
We're chatting with Jason Straka, architect at Fry Straka Global Golf Course Design. We've only got a couple of minutes left here because we got to get to our big giveaway. That's a nice tease to the listeners out there to get their dialing fingers ready coming up in the next segment. Your design firm was awarded the 2014 Golf Inc. Renovation of the Year Awards for two different properties, two very different golf courses in Camelback and Scottsdale. That's a public course in the Columbia City Country Club in Texas. What is, when it comes into renovation, as opposed to you seeing the palette in front of you, but you want to come in and just maybe alter some things, how does that process differ from course to course, and what is it that you are ultimately trying to provide?
Those are two very different projects that you brought up. You know, the one is actually Ambiente, which is Spanish for environment, but that was an existing 18-hole golf course that essentially was completely wiped out. So we rerouted several of the holes, started from scratch. We'd actually, as you'd mentioned, very similar to that approach that you mentioned in California, we had 200 acres of Bermuda grass, which of course in the Arizona desert, you know, that doesn't sound like very environmentally sustainable. But we went down to underneath 100. You know, we're right at 90 acres now. And so you're trying to take that type of a property, make it more environmentally sustainable, but also a lot more attractive to a resort, you know, guest. Whereas Columbia Country Club, that was a private club. You know, we're really focused a lot on playability, on the maintenance aspect. And so you're changing components of the golf course while still trying to keep some sort of continuity, which is a lot different than just starting over from scratch.
The gem that you guys obviously have is Erin Hills, site of the 2017 U.S. Open. You had the U.S. Amateur there in 2011. Mm-hmm. Kelly Kraft beating Patrick Cantlay, if I remember correctly. That golf course, you know what? Dennis will have a question about it because he's played the golf course. I have, I guess, a more general question as it relates, not just to that property, but what we're sort of seeing in American golf. Chambers Bay coming up this coming year for the U.S. Open. The return to Pinehurst's sort of old glory. the fascination, I guess I would say, in this country with the Lynx style sort of golf course, but we've made this sort of American Lynx. Your perspective on what went into that golf course and just kind of where we are in terms of the construction of new golf courses in this country, because the old routing it through the oak trees just doesn't seem to be, I guess, what's in vogue right now in the United States. You could disagree with me, but we've seen this big sort of push towards the modern Lynx course in America.
I think people are searching for the perfect topography, if you will, the perfect type of sites. And so you saw a lot of that with Bandon Dunes. So, you know, with the 3-4 golf courses now they have at Bandon Dunes, and that Lynx look to it. You know, at Erin Hills, you know, we're blessed to be hired. And I say it was a team of Mike Herdson and my current partner Dana Fry and then Ron Witten from Golf Digest, you know, working on it all together. But that was what was called Kettle Moraine area. So that was all glaciated landscaped. People haven't been to that part of Wisconsin before. I mean, it looks like a moonscape, if you will.
Right.
And so it, you know, that was a site where truly you can route a golf course, didn't have to move a whole lot of earth, and you end up with something really fantastic.
Yeah.
And so, again, that was more discovering a site rather than, you know, maybe finding a place in Florida perhaps and you're building an entire golf community around it.
Yeah, the thing that I think is so neat, you mentioned the fact there's a push to dematuring a golf course now. I mean, when you think about it, a lot of these golf courses that were built back in the day, turn of the century, these 90 to 100-year-old golf courses or older, they planted trees. They planted trees and they planted trees. When it first was designed, there wasn't any trees there. I mean, you don't want to take away the trees at Riviera, but look what they did at Oakmont. They basically, 50 trees on the golf course now, and there was 10,000 or 3,000, whatever the number was. I mean, it really kind of neat where they're going with golf now.
It's different. You know, it's a beautiful landscape. Personally, I enjoy it better because you can see throughout the entire landscape and you feel sort of immersed within the golf course itself. Other people, you know, I have a lot of friends that still like to play within the corridors when they can't see from one hole to the other. You know, that's not my favorite style of golf hole or golf course, but, you know, people still do enjoy that to a degree.
All right, I'm going to squeeze a caller because we've got a participant from that USAM back in 2011 that wants to comment. We don't know if this could be good or bad.
Uh-oh.
Jason, so hold your breath. Chris is in California. Chris, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I played in the tournament, and I really enjoyed the course. It's quite long. I mean, I know they have tees that go back to, like, 8,100 yards, and we played it at, like, 7,880 or something like that. Super long. It's not really a traditional link style because a lot of the greens are, like, pushed up. So I think only, I want to say, hole 10, you can actually, like, run the ball. I guess that would be hole 1, but only hole 1, you can actually run the ball up on the green. Most of the holes are pushed up, so you're, like, it's really not traditional links because all the greens are set up above. And they really fall off. It's quite a tough golf course. And they had some ridiculous time there that they wanted us to keep up on. They're literally running from green to tee, trying to play a full hour, 4.5 hours.
Chris, thanks for the phone call. You didn't have the USGA pace of play in your mind when you probably laid it out, though.
No, you know, it's an interesting story about the golf course itself is that, you know, it was intended to be a wonderful resort public facility. Sometimes you get, you know, clients that say, well, I want to have a golf course that hosts the U.S. Open. But, I mean, really, what are the real estate chances of that happening? Well, lo and behold, you know, look what's happened. And so, of course, you know, we've been going back and tweaking the golf course, you know, quite a lot. Of course, the U.S. Amateur was really sort of the test event for the Open itself and figured out what worked really well for that skill set of golfer. You know, which in my daily life, I mean, it's not something that you typically have to worry a whole lot about. You know, of course, again, we made a tweak to the third hole recently, and it was because that golf hole is going to play all the way up to 520-yard par 4. Again, most humans don't play it that long.
Right.
So, you know, when you're talking about trying to make a green receptive to, you know, to that length, then you really have to take a look at the design of it in a whole lot more different light.
Well, Jason, I really appreciate your time. I wish we could sit here and talk architecture for another half an hour, but we got some other pressing matters to get to today. OTF show has been awesome. I really appreciate you guys' hospitality. I'm so happy to be back to it. I know you and I are going to chat probably throughout the course of the week, and I just really appreciate your time stopping by with us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
That's Jason Straka,
so
architect
much,
at Fry Straka Global Golf Course Design, and he's about to be the treasurer of the Ohio Turfgrass Foundation. We know a good person now, Dennis. We finally have somebody that we can go to. We got a guy now. on the board. So that's healthy for us. Hey, what day of Christmas are we on? This is day two? Are we doing day two after the break?
Yeah, we're hoping that we're doing the 12 days of Christmas. Today is day two. We're hoping that we've got somebody every day. We're trying not to keep the days going numerically, but we are going to try every single day from now till the 23rd to try to bring somebody on that's going to come on, and we're going to talk about equipment in one way or the other, some shape, you know, way, shape, or form. We're going to keep golf course manufacturers, golf, you know, the golf industry involved, and try to do something special for you, our listener, because, you know, if it wasn't for our listener, we wouldn't have a show. Carl and I are very fortunate. We get to tell stories. We don't put a lot into what we're going to do about doing our show. It's really all about you guys, the listeners. And our show, if we really, really decided the way our show was going to go every day, it would never go that way anyway, because, you know, Carl and I, we go in different tangents, and it would never be there. It would never be there. So that's why we like our listeners to be a part of it, and we want to give back because it is the giving season. You're listening to Inside the Ropes with Carl and Dennis. When we come back, we've got Chris Hillary from Aerotech Golf. He makes golf shaft, guys. It's the shafts that Carl and I both play in our irons. And listen to this. He is willing to give away 8 iron shafts of your choice on the internet today. That's pretty special. That could be upwards of an $800 giveaway. I have a feeling the phone lines have a possibility to light. Yeah, but you're going to have to keep talking as you dial. So you can keep trying. Good luck with that. But yeah, when we come back, Chris Hillary, president of Aerotech Golf Shafts, will be with us. Going to be a lot of fun.